Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sisano. Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Ether. Today, I have Arjun Buptani, founder of Connex, on the podcast. Connex is a layer two scaling solution for Ethereum, which uses payment channels to enable lightning fast and micro free transactions. They recently released a product called Dai Card, which we've talked a lot about on the podcast, and is something I'm really excited about. Thanks for joining me today, Arjun.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for this. Before we dive deep into the technology, which I want to get into Connex and the Dai Card most of the time, but first, can you talk a little bit about your background and how you got involved in Ethereum?
Yeah, sure. So I originally studied physics, completely unrelated. Ended up in this space after graduating with San Francisco, ended up finding Ethereum just by chance. I was introduced to it by a friend. I was really interested in universal basic income at the time, and one of the things that I found was that you couldn't implement UBI without more efficient systems for how to manage bureaucracy and administration, and that's sort of been one of the guiding principles of everything that I've done in the industry so far, which is let's make the cost of regulation, the cost of administration, the cost of bureaucracy a lot lower, so then that way people get more of what they're owed in the market. So the markets become more efficient. And then I first learned about Ethereum in November 2017, played around with it a little bit, started a small API company, which, helped me learn a lot about what was going on. And that was right in around the time when Golem and Gnosis and were doing their ICOs. And then ended up switching to Connex in May of 2017. And then, it's just been Connex since then.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting you say that about more efficient and smaller fees. I feel like people get really caught up today in the cost of base layer transactions. But where we're going is definitely, in my opinion, a very micro fee system where it's going to become cheaper and more efficient to use, especially on the finance side, which of course is kind of where Dai Card's focus right now, peer-to-peer payments and stuff like that, and a lot of the narrative around Ethereum. But even beyond that, I think people are going to start to realize once these layer two solutions come online how cheap transactions and how efficient these markets are really going to become.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's it's a lot of people don't mention this, but that's already the case, right? Most people think of consumer transaction sizes where it's $5 to $10 for a transaction, but in the existing payments ecosystem for any sort of existing regulated entity, the cost of doing a payment scales with the size of the payment. So if you're sending $10,000 back home, your regulatory cost is much higher, and so you pay a 1 to 5% cost on that, which is ridiculous. And the thing that really drew me to Ethereum and to crypto in general was just that it's a flat fee, right? It doesn't really matter if you're doing a big transaction or a small one. The cost of the actual transaction is the same.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's funny, you always see someone just sent $200 million worth of Ether or Bitcoin and they pay a half cent, right? Those larger transactions, obviously most people aren't sending that much around, but even you said a $10,000 transfer or something, you start to get that back. And I definitely want to transition into kind of where Connex works here, but quickly first, kind of how long has your team been together? It sounds like since around 2018, and how big is it right now?
We originally started in May of 2017, so a little bit before that. We were doing something a little bit different back then, but then we pivoted to layer two scalability at the start of 2018, and then the team is now 5 full-time employees, and then a few other people that contribute code.
Okay, great. Yeah, and so I guess we'll kind of move into the technology side now. We've had a lot of Into the Ether kind of got started with Hudson was our first inaugural guest, and then we had a 5-part series on scaling. So we've talked a lot about layer one and definitely a lot about layer two scaling solutions. So I guess you've mentioned it already, but just to be completely clear to the listeners that maybe haven't heard of this yet, this is a layer two scaling solution that's built on top of this Ethereum base layer that we're all well aware of. And of course, these layer two solutions are coming on ferociously at this point, which is great to see because we really need it. And if we're going to be embarking on a bull run at some point in the near future, you know, fees are going to be going up like crazy. So Arjun, can you just kind of break down Connects for us and exactly how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a payment, like a state channel network, very similar to Lightning Network, except built on Ethereum. And because we're built on Ethereum, there's a set of benefits that we get that don't really exist in like the UTXO limited scripting experience of Bitcoin. And one of those material benefits that we get is that we use something called, we call them threads. Other people, you know, Prune calls them virtual channels, Counterfactual calls them meta channels. But they're effectively the same idea, which is you don't actually need to, you know, you have the traditional idea of a payment channel, which is effectively like a multisig, you know, and if I'm trying to pay you, I lock up some funds in that multisig and then I send you signed settlement instructions so that you can go and redeem those funds later. You can extend that idea further across multiple different channels or across multiple different use cases. So like any sort of arbitrary generalized state with something called a meta channel or a virtual channel or a thread. And what happens there is you just have some sort of resolution logic that can be deployed or is already deployed but can be pointed to in the case that you need to resolve the payment in the event that there's a dispute between us. At its core, it's actually a very simple idea, but it seems very complicated. And I think once people sort of look at it and like see a diagram of it, they tend to get it. Yeah, the way that it's implemented can be kind of challenging. Our end goal, so you mentioned that we're a layer two solution. Our end goal is actually, like we're building this layer two technology because we believe that there's a real market for doing things that aren't really possible with legacy payments. And so our end goal is actually to become a payment network, like a generalized payment network that is usable for anything. And that is where users can transact in any asset. It's a little bit of a ways to get there, but that's eventually the messaging that we want to give to users.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess for people kind of trying to envision this, I mean, a lot of people are familiar, I guess, with the Lightning Network at this point, and I think payment channels in general. But you know, we're going to go into the die card, so I don't want to really use that quite as an example. But can you kind of walk through if someone's like, look, say they have Ether, right, and they want to start sending payments to friends or a friend or whatever it is, like kind of. How does this work, them entering Connects, like just from owning Ether and then like kind of the logistics behind the channel being open and all that, and kind of why would people want to do this, right? Like how would they benefit from it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the rationale behind it is that if you can move your funds into some layer two solution, some sort of layer two ecosystem that is secured by Ethereum, you can get all of the benefits, the trust minimization benefits of Ethereum, but have the ability to scale transactions to existing Web 2.0 paradigms. And that's definitely something that's necessary for anybody that wants to create a real, you know, killer application on Ethereum. As a user, what you're doing is, you know, if I'm a user that has Ethereum, I'm putting my ETH into a channel, and that as I mentioned earlier, that channel is a multisig with some service provider or with somebody else. In Connects, we have a set of defined service providers called hubs. Eventually, they'll be called nodes, but right now they're hubs because they're very simple hub and spoke systems which require no routing. So, in the case of something like the DAI card, I go and deposit some Ether into a channel with the DAI card hub. In the case of the DAI card, that DAI card hub actually swaps and gives me some DAI in return for that, which I can go into more later. But once you have Ether in that channel with the hub, you can now pay anybody else who is also connected to that hub instantaneously. And the way that you do that is by signing a commitment to them, saying that, you know, you sign a commitment to the hub saying that, hey, I want to pay. So let's do a material example. If I want to pay you, Eric. What's really happening there is I sign a commitment to the hub saying I'll pay the hub, you know, one DAI if the hub pays you 0.99 DAI. And so the hub is sort of incentivized to forward these transactions between users and provide this service of pooling liquidity between different parties.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the beauty that once you're in these hubs or these channels, like then the transfers are instant and essentially feeless, right? Like opening the channel, which we'll get into on the die card, costs a little bit of gas. But once you're in there, it's not kind of your normal transaction where you're having to pay a little bit of gas, which is the real beauty of it.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So how does this, I know there's so many layer two solutions kind of popping up and becoming usable now. And we've had Counterfactual on to talk about their generalized state channels. So I'm sure a lot of people are kind of thinking like, how do these solutions differ? Or how does Connex really in your mind differ from something like a Counterfactual or a Raiden, which are more kind of generalized state channels, I guess I would put it.
So that's a great question. We are also technically a generalized state channel implementation. We haven't really focused on a lot of the abstract generalized state, like turn-based games and things like that, because we've just haven't found that to be too useful yet. As an organization, we believe that the killer application of this is payments, and skill-based games are useful, but like you can also get like material benefits from doing skill-based games on Plasma, and people don't seem to mind waiting to like withdraw funds on Plasma for games as much. As far as how different we are from Counterfactual versus and Raiden and other solutions, we're actually most similar to Counterfactual. We just went through all of their protocols, and it's pretty funny. We developed completely separately from each other, but our protocols look very, very similar, eerily similar, actually. Like effectively, the main difference is that Counterfactual is a little bit more generalized and allows you to do like arbitrary application installs, and we are a little bit more specific to payments, and even this could be conditional payments. And because we're a little bit more specific to payments, because we sacrifice, you know, some of that generalizability, like we don't do turn-based games, we're able to batch some of the messaging that happens between users. And that makes like the messaging a little bit faster, and a little bit more like a little bit simpler, since you don't really have to sign each and everything. So I actually would say that there's a decently high chance that we will interoperate with Counterfactual pretty soon. And I think that would be a better, like a globally optimal outcome, because, you know, like we're both open source organizations that are just trying to push forward this technology. There's no real reason for us to compete. And interoperating with each other means that, you know, existing wallets like MetaMask, the burner, like anything else that wants to get access to this technology, just has to integrate one API, and they don't have to, you know, build compatibility with every single thing separately. As far as Raiden goes, Raiden's a little bit different. Raiden's a lot more like Lightning Network, and so they don't do generalized state at all. And they have built more of the network first, and whereas we have built more of our priority from day one has always been, let's build something that's actually immediately useful. And even if it sort of comes at the cost of immediate decentralization or immediate complete trust minimization.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to hear the whole, you talk about kind of interopting with Counterfactual and working together, because I mean, there's kind of two views on this, right? Like Bitcoin, which I want to dive into the Lightning Network here in a second, but Bitcoin's kind of putting all their eggs in the Lightning Network basket, right? And the total opposite spectrum of that to me is Ethereum's trying a ton of different solutions, right? To me, the ideal kind of end state there is eventually, and it sounds like it's already happening, all these different solutions on Ethereum say, hey, we're a lot like you, let's start working together. Because that to me is where the real winners are going to be, because you're not putting all your eggs in one basket and you're not spreading out your mind share too thin, and you kind of settle on a few solutions. So it sounds like that potentially is starting to happen, which is cool to hear.
Right. I'm actually like fairly convinced that there isn't. Okay, maybe with Plasma, like maybe you could probably sell Plasma. Like you could probably be a Plasma service provider and sell it. You don't need to create your own version of Plasma to do that, really. Because like you could just, like the way that you sell Plasma and the competitive differentiation that you have there is associated with uptime and associated with like how simple you make it for people to set up and like maintain their own Plasma chain. But selling like payment channels or selling state channels is just, it's not really going to happen, right? Because what you're building here is just a standard. And in the end, it doesn't matter that much which standard gets adopted, because to the end user doesn't really care, right? Like end users we found don't care about, they don't even really care about trust minimization that much. So the standard that'll get adopted is the one that like the industry adopts, and at some point or another, everyone is either gonna have to integrate a token into their layer two ecosystem, like Seller, which I believe is suboptimal, or they're gonna have to go and build a business, in which case they don't really care that much if their standard gets adopted or not. I think you're right. I think especially in payment channels, we're like long overdue for just a consolidation.
Yeah, I agree. And then kind of bring that, like, there's it, not just on the developer side or the layer two side, like there's a lot of split of mind share right now in crypto. I feel like we're very fragmented in a lot of places. So I think it's going to be beneficial to kind of see all of that mind share kind of come back together. So it'll be interesting to watch that play out. And I do want to talk about funding, but let's save it to the end because that's a very interesting conversation that you just brought up as well. I said it a little bit ago, but I want to talk about Lightning Network a little bit. Kind of, I'm sure as people are listening to this, they're thinking that this sounds a lot like Lightning Network on Bitcoin, which it is. Why did you choose to build Connects on Ethereum instead of just kind of joining the Lightning Network effort on Bitcoin? Like, what are the pros and cons to both that you see?
That's a great question. One of the things that we did, or at least I started looking into when we first started building this and first started trying to understand protocols and what makes protocols succeed is we looked into examples of protocols in the past, things like HTTP, things like TCP/IP, and even like BitTorrent, and figured out what was it that made certain things succeed over others. And apart from, you know, in the case of something like BitTorrent, of course, there was the decentralization and like resilience aspect of it. But for other internet protocols, a big part of it was just that in most of those cases, the protocol that was built was able to do a lot more than what it was originally designed for. Right, like when we built TCP/IP and when we built HTTP and that started being adopted, like no one had any idea that it would be used for the things that it's used for today, and it was just because of the fact that the protocol was flexible enough to allow for other use cases to be built on top of it that it didn't need to be disrupted anytime soon, and what we found was that on Bitcoin the like domain space of things that you can do is limited fundamentally. You are limited to transacting in Bitcoin. You're limited to only making microtransactions, and those are that are synchronous and where both parties are online. And by synchronous, I mean like, you know, they happen instantaneously with both parties. There's no sort of I pay you and then you redeem it later, conditionally based on some logic. And what we kind of realized was like early on, the intuition was there is probably going to be something that happens with some token, maybe a stable coin, and some intrinsic value of conditional payments that we just aren't seeing yet that people will want in the future. And if they find that the protocol that they're using doesn't do that, they'll invent a new protocol. And so that was a big part of what like led to the decision of, you know, Ethereum is the one to build this on. And the other big part of it was that we were already a part of the Ethereum community. So we did, understandably, we do have a little bit of a bias view there.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting how you put that. Like, you never really know how this stuff's going to be used, right? Like, we're seeing so many use cases already that I don't think people originally envisioned. And then we're seeing some use cases die off that people thought were going to happen. Like, so to just kind of build it and kind of see what happens and doing that, and I totally agree with you, building it on Ethereum gives you more flexibility kind of for where that's going to end up. So that makes sense to me.
Right. And that's actually, right, like, this sort of clicked. I mean, there was a conscious moment a couple of weeks, maybe not a couple of weeks ago, I guess a couple of months ago, where we were like, okay, let's create the DAI card. And I was thinking to myself, I'm really glad we built on Ethereum, because we would not have been able to utilize stablecoins. We would not have been able to build something like the DAI card to hide away the complexity of any of this to end users who just want to pay in dollars. Because end users don't want to deal with Bitcoin. They don't want to deal with knowing about something new if they don't have to. And we now have that option, which is amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I would say that's the perfect segue in talking about the die card. And I, if anybody follows me or listens to the podcast, they know that this is one of my favorite things that's come out recently. I've been using it a ton. I kind of talked with your team a lot when it was in the early beta stages on the testnet and kind of going back and forth on some iterations and hopefully provided some valuable feedback to you guys. But so I think people have potentially heard of it at this point, but if they haven't, can you kind of just walk us through what the die card is and kind of what your team envisioned here?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing we were struggling with was getting people to fully appreciate the power of using payment channels and the power of using something like us. And we were, you know, we were inspired by the Spank card, which does something similar, and we were inspired by the Burner wallet, which does something similar. And what we decided was, okay, one, we need to make it easier for people to integrate Connext, and we need to make it simple for people who just want to do basic DAI payments, don't want to host their own hub, don't want to deal with any of the complexity that comes with the low level architecture, to just get access to those payments. And two, we want to capture the imaginations of people. So what the DAI card is it's a very simple Burner wallet, Venmo-like interface, where anyone can deposit ETH to the address in the card. When you deposit ETH into the address, that address is a channel is set up with that address as the key. That channel is set up with a DAI hub that we host and we collateralize. And on the back end, there is an instantaneous swap that happens where your ETH is swapped for DAI. So this is really cool for a couple of reasons. One, while you can come into the system with your own DAI, this removes this like extra middle step of having to go to Uniswap or 0x or something like that to get DAI in order to just do dollar stable payments. And it's also really great because once you do that one process of depositing and setting up the channel, everything else is instant and free. Like, you can pay anybody else that's connected to the system instantly. You can also create what we call links, which are referral payments, effectively, where you send some money and then generate a secret, and it's kind of like a UTXO. You send that secret to somebody, and they can, a friend, and then that friend can come and redeem that payment, which will also set up a DAI card for them. Big part of the reason why we built the DAI card was because we wanted to get a lot of feedback very quickly, and we did get that. And thank you, Eric, for that. And big thanks to everybody else that tried it out and broke it, because that was the point. We wanted to figure out, what things work, what things don't work, where the UX pressure points are. And so we're sort of really excited that it's been received the way that it has.
Yeah, it's great. And I think it's very similar to the XDAI Burner Wallet, which, Austin Griffith had put out a few months back and got pretty popular at ETH Denver and stuff. Can you walk us through a little bit like how you see it as differing from XDAI Burner Wallet? Have you been collaborating with Austin at all? Could you see these efforts being combined, or do you see it valuable to have multiple options out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that there is, I think we can combine efforts. I've been speaking to Austin a lot about it. I got Austin's feedback the whole way through development. And like I said, we're very strongly influenced by the Burner Wallet. So there's a couple of differences. One is related to how the funds are secured, and then the other is related to what our actual target market is. Regarding how funds are secured, so we use payment channels on the core Ethereum blockchain. That means that your funds are always non-custodial. Now, we have a caveat, which is that in some cases your payments are custodial. So link payments, for instance, are custodial. And what that means is that, it's possible that if the hub goes down or disappears, your payment, while it's in flight, could be lost. If you send a 10-cent payment to a friend, those 10 cents may disappear. But the rest of your funds, which are in your actual card, are always yours, and you can always go and retrieve those off the base blockchain. We're working towards making the payments themselves non-custodial too, but we've prioritized user experience over perfect, trust minimization for now. The difference between that and how XDAI works is that XDAI is like a DPoS sidechain. And because it's a sidechain, it's not always going to be the case that your funds are non-custodially available. So if like all four validators of XDAI get subpoenaed by the US government at the same time, your funds are gone and there's nothing you can do about it. So there is like a step up in usability there, or not usability, sorry, in fund security there. Now the downside, and this gets into where we think the use cases for the DAI card are, is that the XDAI, once you are on the XDAI sidechain, you have like the ability to do a lot more. You know, it is a blockchain of its own, so you can do anything that you can on the Ethereum-based chain. Whereas the DAI card is specifically for payments, and in this case, specifically for DAI payments. So there is a limitation there. And then the second limitation is that in order for our system to be trust minimized, all payments are collateralized by the hub. And the reason that this happens is, as I mentioned earlier, if I'm paying Eric, I am paying the hub and the hub is paying Eric. And so for that to be a trust minimized payment, the hub needs money in its channel with Eric to be able to sign a commitment saying, hey, I owe you that money. And so the hub needs to have at least as many funds collateralized as are funds being received by all the people connected to the hub. It's a weird sentence, but that is usually somewhere between like 1 and 2 times the payment volume of the hub if it's collateralized efficiently. In the case of something like XDAI, that doesn't need to exist at all. And so you know, XDAI for retail payments, for you know, event payments, I think XDAI is awesome, because like for most vendors, they don't really care too much about like whether their funds are safe for the 2 days that they're using XDAI. And chances are that XDAI, like a POA network, has a very vested interest in making sure that those vendors are paid out. And so there is, like, while there is a certain element of trust there, you know, it's not the case that, like, you know, if we did payments at ETH Denver with DAI card, then we'd have to collateralize $35,000 in, like, vendor channels in order to give money to them. That sort of brings us to the main use cases that we see being useful for the DAI card right now, which are for smaller payments. We think that the real value of what we're building is for smaller payments, for like micropayments for content and for like machine-to-machine/IoT payments. That's a little bit different from retail, and that's a little bit different from like using crypto in your day-to-day. And I think that sort of makes sense, because while the crypto industry wants to spend the crypto that they have, it already costs very little to make a DAI transaction. And most people who are people within Ethereum are technical enough to know what gas is and to be able to wait the 15 seconds it takes for a transaction to be mined on chain. So that's more of an issue of adoption and less of an issue of what layer two scaling solution you're using. And that's something that we sort of realized after like talking to a bunch of people who were using the DAI card and like trying to build things with it, we found that the people that were building things with it were the people who were like, wait, I actually think I can use this to do something that we couldn't do before at all, that just simply wasn't possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, first of all, I think that's a great kind of layout of how XDAI and DAI card differ, and the different technologies they use and what the different use cases could be. It's interesting. Like I'm always, so we're a little jaded now, because like the network, even though the network's at like 80 to 100% full every day, like the gas fees are pretty low. So right now I totally agree with you. Like it's probably better. The DAI card is better for someone that has a lot of transaction volume, and those cost savings are going to save up. But for someone just wanting to send DAI on the main network, it's not very costly right now. However, once we go through kind of another bull run or rise in popularity, right, those gas fees are going to start to go up. And I could personally see, like, I'm going to keep my DAI card kind of always collateralized. And if someone needed to pay me or I needed to pay them, the first thing I'm going to say is, hey, do you have a DAI card? Because it's just easier for me. But especially once we kind of enter more network congestion, I think a lot of transactions are going to start to naturally want to shift onto these layer two solutions. And I think you've positioned yourself pretty well there with DAI card as well.
Right. And that is sort of the goal. So I guess I'll give the caveat of saying, like, this is more of an entry point than like an end goal, right? We do want to become a generic payments network for everything, and do retail payments day to day. And like, right now, the main limitation of that is just the amount of collateral. So once we you know, decentralize ourselves, once we have a Lightning-esque network where we're not the only ones running the hub, that starts to make a lot more sense. Our goal with, you know, prioritizing micropayments first is to get actual meaningful traction with like non-crypto end users, which is something that like is, I think, going to be necessary if we want to have an ecosystem that like is usable by the time that the next bull run happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's going to be coming, and like, I'm glad that these layer two solutions are there so that we're going to have options for sure. I mean, I don't know when it's coming, but it's going to come. And then all of a sudden gas fees are going to be back up. Well, even today, I mean, price is running. And I think last I checked, average gas fee was like 10 Gwei or something like that. So it's already going up a little bit. And I saw that Bitcoin's getting a nice meme pool growing and all that. So at least we'll have some options this time. I want to quickly talk about, I mean, you just mentioned kind of your longer term goals, and you said to get there, you need to get fully decentralized as far as the hubs go. So you've talked a lot, you have a single hub now, and your team is pretty much responsible for that hub and making sure it's collateralized. Cause if I send in, you know, one ether to the channel, you got to make sure that there's 157 DAI there or whatever. Cause once I send it in, it's converted over essentially. So what's the roadmap here? Like, what's the difficulty level, I guess, in getting multi hubs going? And is that something that eventually, like myself, like end users are going to be able to run and provide collateral to? And are there kind of some financial incentive plans around running nodes for people?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I'll cover them all in turn. I'll cover all of your questions in turn. First of all, it's not that difficult, at least from a protocol, at the protocol level, because doing multi-hop is sort of built into how our protocol works already. It's just like a simple extension of what we had. What we have to do is like modify how our contract works to an extent in order to make some like quality of life improvements for things that aren't problems now, but will become problems in a multi-hop environment. So for instance, right now, when you dispute a channel, when you dispute a thread, which is you dispute like one payment, whether that is a single payment or whether that's a extended conditional payment that like lays open and unresolved for a while. When you dispute a thread, it currently in our existing hub forces you to dispute all other threads and then like clear all the threads from your channel before you can start transacting again. That's fine for the existing paradigm, because as a user, if you have a problem and you're disputing your thread, if you're disputing a transaction, chances are you don't really have a lot of other transactions running concurrently. And chances are you probably are not going to like continue doing things while you're disputing, right? Like you resolve the dispute and go back to transacting afterwards. It gets a little bit weirder if it's in a multi-hop paradigm, because if I'm running a node and then you're running a node, Eric, and like we're routing, you know, $50,000 worth of payments through our nodes, like through our connection between our nodes. And those are $50,000 worth of payments that are happening between, I don't know, 10,000 users. That would mean that every single time one of those users had a dispute, we would have to dispute our channel. So like all 10,000 of those users could no longer transact. So that's obviously like a thing that has to change. We've already sort of have an idea of how to do this. It's just something that we didn't build into the first iteration because we wanted to save time and constrain the like surface, like the attackable surface area of like problems we could run into. Aside from that, it's mostly just building the actual infrastructure pieces needed to do to like pass messages back and forth using libp2p and things like that. The one major challenge that's remaining is routing, which we still haven't quite figured out. But we're actually going to, this is a little bit of a controversial opinion, but we're actually punting on that for now. And the reason is that we're not like Lightning. You mentioned it yourself. There is, you know, there are many, many scaling solutions on Ethereum, and there's only one for Bitcoin. And so because there's only one for Bitcoin, the Lightning Network can just ask Bitcoin users to run nodes. And they will do it, even though there's no incentive to do so. And even though they're not, you know, they're just sort of like doing it because they have an interest in the network, and because even though like no users are actually using it for day-to-day payments yet. My expectation is that that's not actually going to happen for us. It doesn't really make sense. So what we're focusing on instead for the next 6 months at least is to bootstrap the demand for the network. Because if we find that there's enough demand for payments, then it makes sense to run your own node and contribute services to the network, because then you can make money from it. And I think there is sort of like a demand curve there for the availability of payment related services, where as the number of nodes grows, as the supply of nodes grows, While you're able to offer cheaper payments and better, you know, like better throughput and like better payments availability, return from running a node is very, very like reduces down to almost nothing. So that's kind of where our focus is right now.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, kind of create the product, get some demand for it, then all of a sudden you have liquidity, and then people are going to want to come and run some nodes and get some financial gain out of it, right? So I think that makes a lot of sense. One thing I'm noticing is it seems like your team does a lot of market research and product market fit, which I think is great. I think that's lacking a decent amount in the crypto space. Is that something you guys try to actively do?
Yeah, as much as humanly possible. We've been like, that's a part of the reason why, and I like fully understand that some of the opinions that we have are controversial, right? Like, I know that there's a lot of people who want a crypto Venmo that is available right now. What we found is that only a very small subset of extreme power users even make DAI payments to each other right now. And those users already do so, and they don't, you know, like, they could use something like the DAI card if they wanted to, but we don't really need to make very significant modifications for them to do that. And conversely, we also talk to people outside of the industry. So we've been doing a pretty thorough investigation into indie gaming, because we think that micropayments for content is going to be huge. We think that that's a really, really excellent way to monetize for traditionally marginalized content creators, whether that be in gaming, in music. Big shout out to Uja there for integrating micropayments for their music platform, which this is the exact reason I'm excited for it. And then also for streaming video, whether that's, you know, generalized video for video content on something like YouTube, or in the case of SpangChain, which is also using our hubs, adult video content. Our philosophy has always been that most people seem to target the limited domain of crypto users. And there's a lot of companies fighting over the, 5,000 power users that actually use Ethereum every day. And there's not enough companies fighting over, hey, let's compete with PayPal for, a different market outside of crypto.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense to me. I mean, why build something that only a couple thousand people are going to use right now, right? You might as well go for bigger goals. And at the same time, you're still providing, a product to these power crypto users, which is great. So I like where you guys' head's at, that's for sure. I think I don't need to say it, but you guys are building great stuff. And I would definitely say just keep up the good work.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah. So on that, I mean, just kind of looking into the future there, kind of you mentioned funding and how it's going to be tough to kind of monetize these layer two solutions. What's your current funding look like, and what's your plan for the future, and how can people kind of help contribute to your team?
We're a VC backed company. That's basically the way that we foresee this going, is that there's two arms to what we're doing. There's the, VC backed corp. This is probably very, very familiar to people who have looked at organizations in this industry, but there's a VC-backed for-profit organization, and then we are building this technology, which is completely open source, and we expect that'll, once we're done, and once it's ready to be its own independent thing, and once there's enough contributors and maintainers, that'll get pushed under a foundation and can be self-sustaining, and we can go off and do our own for-profit thing. We sort of expect to continue fundraising soon, because we're now hitting a point where we think getting more funding in can help us grow faster, and that's a good place to be. And then in the long run, I think the way that this becomes sustainable is that we sort of finish building this technology, and we rebrand, not as an Ethereum layer two solution, which means nothing to the end user that wants a cheaper, more secure, more stable alternative to PayPal. But instead, we just become something that is that. We say we are an alternative payments network that is specifically targeting micropayments for content and machines, start building solutions for the people that need that. Now, the way that we expect to monetize that is by providing services. It's kind of a gotcha, but we genuinely think that there's enough complexity with using this stuff that you can provide integrations and easier usability on top of this core network, and people would like we found that people seem to be decently happy to pay a small amount of money for it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I can definitely see that. It's interesting, like a lot of these dApps and crypto teams are starting to explore different options outside of tokens, right? Because I'm a pretty firm believer if your app doesn't need a token, it shouldn't have it, potentially it could get forked out. But I do think like paying or charging for services or just for like general knowledge, right? And helping people implement things or kind of like pro features or maybe even small fees on the platform. I think it's going to be interesting to see the experimentation happen here on the profit side.
Right. We're big fans of like the GitHub model of, you know, the core protocol and like, you know, being able to like openly contribute to the network and like within generic defined boundaries is totally free. And then if you want to set up private nodes, so basically have like a private ecosystem of your own to do payments in that has only limited amount of connections to the main network. Or if you want to customize your nodes in certain ways, or if you want to set up very specific user profiles, or if you want to set up like integrations with like, you know, fiat on and off ramps that are like native, then you buy a pro version at a certain fixed cost. And that comes with, you know, a dashboard and analytics and stuff like that, which just sort of make it easier to run a business on top of this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're going to see that model a lot. And I do want to plug you guys. You are on Gitcoin Grants and the CLR matching is going right now. So if people are listening, you knew I was going to bring it up. If people are listening and they want to go contribute some funds in crypto, either DAI or Ether or whatever you want to the Connects team, just go to gitcoin.co/grants. And right now the CLR matching is going. So any kind of funding you give any team out there, but in this case, Arjun's team is going to be matched a lot more. So your single donation go a long way. So I highly recommend people go check that out. I guess last question for you, what can we kind of expect from your team on the short-term roadmap for the rest of 2019? Are we looking at potential multi-hub functionality, updates to the DAI card, or what are you guys planning?
Great question. So our main focus right now is getting usability on like getting actual end users, actual material use cases using this every day. To do that, we're currently prioritizing hub integrations and like optimizing the hub user experience. Some things that are a part of that include a much, much easier way to integrate the core technology behind the DAI card into everything that you're doing. So just a very simple NPM package that you can use, and it just basically sets up a custom DAI card on your website. And you don't have to, like, you can skin it however you want. It just sort of looks like Stripe and works the same way. And then the other thing that we're kind of looking at in the mid to long term, maybe not mid to long, but at least in like a few months, is on and off ramps. Because I think in order to get any material traction with people outside the space, we need that. Like, we really, really desperately need that. So that's, we're very, very interested in talking to anyone that's providing services for that right now, and also anyone that just wants to integrate the card.
Yeah, that's a huge one, on off ramps. I guess SendWire is doing some stuff out there with that. And I definitely, we got to minimize these steps. And even though DAI card takes care of the ETH to DAI collateralization, you still have to get the crypto, right? And that's a big barrier for people. So I think that's a big one, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if people want to kind of keep up with your team and all the progress, what's the best way? Twitter, Discord, what do you guys have out there?
We have a Twitter where we post pretty regularly about everything that we do. Discord is definitely the best way to reach us. We actually, a few months back, we got rid of our team chat and we just do everything in Discord now. So like, it's just sort of wanting to be as close as we possibly can with the people who join our community. So if you have any questions at all, that's definitely the best place to reach out. And then we also have documentation. We have some documentation on ETHub for using the DAI card, which is awesome. And then we also have some documentation in our GitHub associated with, you know, what we're about and how to set up your own hub or integrate with ours.
Great. Well, like I said, keep up the good work. And again, thanks for joining the podcast. I think it's been a great conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and at zazzle0x.